It's time for the Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. The views expressed at the Financial Cafe are those of the hosts and do not represent the views of Southern Illinois University Edwardsville, the SIU Board of Trustees, or WSIE Radio. Securities offered through Nickel Investors Corporation at No. 1 Executive Park, Granite City, Illinois, member FINRA and SIPC.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
I'd be rich.
And now, welcome to the Financial Cafe and our hosts, Larry Lexo and John Graney.
Good morning, John Graney.
Good morning, Larry Lexo. How are we doing this fine day?
We are doing awesome.
I, as usual, am living the dream.
Can't beat that.
Working through some stuff for our show today. We are now in June. I cannot believe we are in June.
Yeah.
I cannot believe my kids are out of school, and I cannot believe I'm still alive. Insanity, insanity, insanity.
Where did the rest of the year go? That's what I want to know.
But beats the alternative, right?
It definitely does. Yeah, no doubt.
Anyway, June, we had May, which comes before June. It's been that way for a while.
May
was Women's Month and financial topics related to women. So June, naturally, that we have Father's Day coming up in a few weeks, will be men. And financial topics, related financial topics.
So are there many differences between the financial topics for men versus the financial topics for women?
You're jumping ahead. Ready for that question.
Okay.
Yet. I'll hold that. You know how I work. I have my bullet points. I like to stick to the script. I have to rein you in sometimes, but I'm not ready for that question yet.
Well, then it's time to thank the Chef Shop.
Thank you.
For a wonderful event.
Great escape from there. That
a
was beautiful.
Wonderful event.
You're a professional.
I am good at this, John. Wonderful event, wonderful day, lots of prizes, lots of food, lots of family, lots of fun. So thanks again. Congratulations to the Chef Shop for 20 years in business. Thanks to them for underwriting the Financial Cafe here at WSIE-FM 88.7 The Sound. And
they've listened to the show.
I'm sorry?
I wonder if they've listened to the show.
Oh, I believe so.
Okay. And they still underwrite us.
And still do, yeah.
I guess we're doing something right.
Yeah, it must be because we're still here.
Okay.
Of course, I recall last show we put on, they shut off the lights.
Yeah. And I had said to you, I always wondered, how would they tell us when, you know, your show's off the
you're
air?
Done.
You're no longer, you're no longer going to do the Financial Cafe. I thought that was kind of abrupt.
Yeah,
but luckily, it was just someone hit the switch, and I had to go back up. And
we were just sitting here, and the lights went out, and I'm like, uh-oh. How would you do, John? But anyway, thanks to the Chef Shop for underwriting the show, helping not only us to spread some good financial information to both men and women in the listening audience. For those of you who do listen, and if you have a question, write it down. You can email it. Go to www.thefinancialcafe.us. That's thefinancialcafe.us. You can email to John at jgraney@nickelfinancial.com or to me at Larry Lexo. That's lexo@nickelfinancial.com. We will respond to you. There also are blogs out there of prior shows. So if you have a specific topic, you're looking for something regarding Social Security, life insurance, disability, long-term care. In the last almost year now, we've covered just about every major financial topic and a few minor ones along the way. Check out some of the prior shows. If you have additional questions, go ahead and email us. Let us know, and we'll be happy to try and answer them on the air, or we will be glad to get back to you individually. So having said that, it's time for whatever we cover next.
Does that take over, John?
That was take over, John.
Okay. So in the market, what I wanted to talk about today was the market. I imagine that. But more specifically, I have two articles that I pulled up the other day. And I just love this. It's almost like if you listen to any kind of financial show on the radio or on TV, You get someone that comes in and says, doom and gloom, the market's going to crash. And then they go to commercial break, and then the next guy comes in and he says, everything's great, the market's going to go up, and you scratch your head going, how can that be? Well, first of all, if you can find out the person's name and which company they work for, that may be a little bit of an indication.
Driving factor, you're
yes,
saying?
Yes, I think, you know, unbiased opinions are sometimes hard to come by.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, for the market, I have from Investment News, the stock market rally may have further to run. And
imagine that.
The other one was from Bloomberg, which has, is Dow theory signaling a market downturn? So we'll touch on these two articles. I'll start off with the stock market rally may have further to run. A lot of this is dependent on the budget, on policies by this administration. We've touched on this many times, and it still holds true. And we'll get on the, we'll talk about the budget on just in a minute here. But if the policies go through, if this administration is successful in the tax cuts, the spending cuts, achieving the GDP growth that they are projecting, I think absolutely the stock market has further to run. We have not had a situation in quite some time where we have a very business favorable administration. Tax cuts on the business side, tax cuts on personal side. Remember, folks, our GDP is almost more than 70% of GDP, which is gross domestic product. Everything that we produce, how you measure the health of our economy, is spending, consumer spending. So if you put more money in their pocket, if businesses have tax cuts and they're able to hopefully transfer some of that to the employees of their companies, and then you reduce the taxes that people are paying, people are going to spend more. It means the economy grows, and yes, the stock market has further to run. Now, you look like you're getting ready to say something, so.
I totally agree in terms of tax savings, and particularly with the market as it is today. There are as many that say it's going up versus going down, and obviously we know that is a fact. It will either go up or it will go down. There aren't a whole lot of other options.
Let me get my Dick Tracy badge for you.
Put that
I got
down.
It here somewhere.
You can write that down. take it to the bank, John.
Put it in stone.
Take it to the bank. It will go up or it will go down. But depending on who you're talking to, I think as you will illuminate us about the budget, so-called budget cuts that everyone's talking about. You think, you know, the world is ending, and it's just not.
I agree. Oh, well, I mean, you never know with North Korea and geopolitical stuff, but purely from the fundamentals, we had a pretty good earnings season. The majority of companies beat either achieved or beat the earnings estimate that the analysts were projecting for their various companies in the S&P 500. That's very positive. There's a lot of cash sitting on the sidelines, which is very good.
Still.
And even payroll numbers have gone up as far as the amount of money employees are being paid. So all that is positive, and I think a lot of that is speculative. It's in anticipation that the administration will get through their policies and so forth, to be determined. But, you know, I'm in the camp that the stock market rally may have further to run. You always hate to say something like that when you're at all-time highs for the valuation of the stock market, when you're still in the longest-running bull market that we've ever seen. But I think we are certainly in a situation where if these things go through, all the statistics, the PE ratios and everything will make sense and we'll be good to go. So what is this Dow theory that we have here?
That's a good question, John. What is the Dow theory?
The Dow theory, the Dow Jones Industrial Average made its debut May 26, 1896. Grover Cleveland was president. Did you vote for him?
I don't remember.
Okay. Grover Cleveland was president. The Model T was just a twinkle in Henry Ford's eye. He went on to say that one major tenet New highs by the Dow Jones Industrial Average must be confirmed by new highs in the Dow Jones Transportation Average. Presumably, increases in the industrial production would be accompanied by increases in transportation of goods to and from factories. Dow Theory's latest bull market signal was in October prior to the election. That has come true, when both the industrials and transport hit new highs. While the signal still stands, there is a bit of fly in the ointment, says Mr. Carlson. Neither index has eclipsed their March 1 highs, which would be a reconfirmation of the bullish trend. Most worrisome is the behavior of the transports. Since then, the Dow industrials are down 0.72%, while the Dow transports have fallen by 6.38%. Most people don't pay attention to the transports, but we do because it's extremely economically sensitive. We like to see the transports behave better. I have a hard time with the different, what's the word I'm looking for? Well, you have these theories, you have these models, you have these indexes, people trying to predict what the market's going to do. I think that's impossible. There wouldn't be so many people in jail if it was actually a proven way. However, again, as we touched on why we think the bull market will continue, you know, there are all those caveats that we put in there. We're at all-time highs. We're seeing, you know, this and that going on that's been favorable that hasn't happened before. You have to scratch your head. So what does all this mean? What does this come down to? Have a financial plan. We say this all the time, and we're going to continue saying it all the time, but if you're nervous about the frothiness, if you will, of the market, then put pen to paper, put your budget together, hand it over to a financial advisor that you trust and can work with. Make sure they do a proper financial plan for you with various testing, whether it's historical or Monte Carlo simulations and so forth. But make sure that your plan is on track, no matter what the market does. You know, make sure you have enough cushion in your plan to achieve the volatility, as Larry so eloquently and intelligently put, the market will go up and the market will go down.
Generally not at the same time.
Wow.
I'll just put that out
you
there.
You've had some coffee today.
I mean, I've finished one. I'm on second batch.
You are on a roll today. So,
well, the one thing that is intangible regarding the market is just the general economic feeling. And I don't know. People try and measure it. I don't know that is possible. But the feeling in my mind today is positive for the first time in many, many years from both a business and a personal economic standpoint. I'd have to go back to the Reagan years back in the 80s. I do remember them, John, as do you. That was the last time that we had a business-friendly environment in which businesses were encouraged to take risks, to invest, to expand, to develop new programs. And I think the situation today with President Trump is again friendly to business in ways that it hasn't been in many, many years. And we're seeing that. We're seeing a lot of our business owners who are willing to invest in the businesses, willing to expand, willing to take risks, as I said, that they haven't been willing to do for, I'd say, the last probably 16 years, 20 years maybe. So if that interpolates to the market continuing to go up, I think that is a good indication of the sentiment.
Oh, I agree. As we now make the transition from talking about the Dow theory and whether or not the market's going to go up or down. I mean, so much of this is dependent on the budget, and the budget just came out recently. And, of course, one side of the aisle has slammed the budget. The other side of the aisle has praised the budget. And, folks, I truly believe we are in a society now that looks at party first, not country. And we have become so partisan, we have become so divided that we have these goggles on, and we really need to come together. We are in a situation where, as Americans, we have to work as Americans, work together to get things done. and really remove this, you know, well, you're left, you're right, you're conservative, you're liberal. Look, we're all something, and that's what makes the world go round. That's what makes this country, what makes this country great, is the fact that we're all so different. But we've lost respect. We've lost the ability to see someone else's argument, to actually debate, as opposed to just start screaming and yelling and name calling. And it doesn't do anyone any good, and it certainly doesn't do the country any good. So as I look at the budget, there are a few areas where some things have been cut, but the majority of the quote cuts are over the next 10 years. The growth that has always been applied to whatever line item on the budget, let's call it 5%. Let's just say defense spending goes up by 5%. Funding of this goes up by 5%. This appropriation grows by 5%.
It's an assumption that things are continuing to be as they were, again, back in the 80s and maybe even 70s, where you could see a 5% increase in need in spending and inflation and whatnot. And that's just not the case. So continuing at 5% growth rate, you're spending money that really doesn't need to be spent.
Right. Exactly. And folks, if you were to sit down and do your personal budget and you were spending more than you were making, you have to make changes. And those changes are never pleasant, without a doubt. Unfortunately, the one part that in this budget that did not get touched are the parts that I truly believe have to be addressed, and no politician wants to address them because they don't get reelected. But Social Security and Medicare, these are the two biggest components of the budget, and interest on the debt is another one. And if all three of these continue to grow, we are going to be in serious trouble at some point. We keep kicking this can down the road to the next administration and so forth, but eventually we're going to run out of road and we're going to find ourselves in a lot of trouble. So, of course, it didn't matter who was in office. The other side would say that these cuts were draconian and so forth. But for the most part, this administration has turned off those growth rates and said, look, from 2016 to 2017, there's no growth rates. Over the next 10 years, there won't be any growth rates. And hopefully the growth of GDP and so forth will more than offset some of these decisions that had to be made. So when I look at, here's a New York Times article, Trump's first budget works only if wishes come true. And to some degree, there's some truth to this headline. And it all works because the budget assumes an acceleration of economic growth to an annual pace of 3% a year, much higher than the post-recession average of 2%. So, again, as we talked about previously, if the tax cuts and go through so forth and people start spending more, consumer spending goes up, consumer spending makes up most of GDP, I think that 3% growth rate is very reasonable. And if you look historically, you know, when you look at when investment managers and so forth talk about normal market conditions, it's certainly GDP growth of more than 3%. We have just been in such a stagnant economy mm-hmm. for so long that, you know, unfortunately the new norms are around 2%. But I think we can absolutely see 3% growth. And I believe the Fed does as well, as, you know, they raise rates and there's, you know, talk of a couple more interest rate hikes this year. We'll see what happens. But I think it's very achievable. Achievable.
Very achievable.
It's easy for me to say.
Sometimes.
Absolutely. Trump administration estimates higher growth would yield an additional $344 billion in individual income taxes, even after the proposed reductions in individual tax rate. Trump wants to combine the stream of revenue with sharp spending cuts to reduce annual federal deficits. So let's look at where some of these spending cuts are going to take place.
The devil is in the detail, John. And if you listen to the rhetoric, depending on what station or which publication that you read, there is a total lack of details in terms of statements being made, stating alleged facts that just don't exist. Mm. And I think that's a big part of the problem is people take the time, read the bill. I don't care if it's 1,000 pages or whatever it happens to be. Read the bill. You will finally get the facts on what it actually says.
So, yes, absolutely. So we will highlight some of these for you here. Spending cuts, $4.3 trillion over the next 10 years. Non-defense discretionary spending would be cut by $1.4 trillion. So they're going to cut EPA. I think the EPA is way too big to begin with.
Absolutely.
So, my personal opinion, I'm on board with that. State Department-related programs will be cut by roughly 30%. Law enforcement and Homeland Security spending are exceptions. I am all for Homeland Security. Unfortunately, we had just had that attack in Britain with the concert and lots of young people and families losing their lives. I don't care what anyone says. I'm all for our increasing spending for our home security. And they also added in some money for the border wall. It's not to get too political here, but this one cracks me up because you have a lot of people saying don't build the wall, the Pope being one of them. But what's around the Vatican?
A wall.
Oh, okay. Anyway, moving on.
Don't do what I do. Do what I say.
Exactly. Let's see. There will be some savings on interest payments on the debt, $311 billion. The administration predicts that its cost cutting will slow the rise as far as the interest on the debt. And the interest on the debt is a huge line item for our budget.
Mm.
So let's see. What else do we have in here?
Student interest loan. Adds up no matter how or who is paying it. It is an expense you have to include in the budget. And going back to having a plan, you know, and having it in written down with specific time frames and objectives, implementation of the plan and monitoring is the only way that you're going to be able to manage taxes and expenses for the future.
This is a big topic that has, I think, been misrepresented. Welfare programs. So we've heard people complaining about this budget that we're cutting and we're hurting the poor person, we're hurting the little person. What the administration wants to do is get the federal government out of this and push this back to the states. So if you think about it, The purpose of our federal government is not to be the end-all be-all. And making government smaller, I am a huge proponent of, which is why I'm a libertarian. I believe in small government. And we've created this beast and pushed this back to the states. Let the states handle their own people, constituents, whatever you want to call it, in their state. Government payments, we want to reduce that by $142 billion. Anytime the government gets less money, I'm all for it because I get tired of seeing some of these just ridiculous programs that they get money for.
And they do such a good job of allocating it, too.
I know. Financial regulation, Larry, $35 billion cut. Woohoo! That means the Dodd-Frank bill will
go away.
Be changed. I don't know if go away. I mean, there were some good parts to it. And I'm not saying that, you know, we need to get rid of regulation because, unfortunately, there are companies are people that are all about the money and end up hurting the individual investor. So some of the increases, the administration is proposing a $4.3 trillion cut over 10 years, and there's a $717 billion increase in the budget. Discretionary defense spending will be increased. I think that's good. Absolutely. I mean, our threats, The other week, he gave a speech to NATO, and I was surprised that, was it 23 of the 28 NATO countries?
Sounds about right.
Did not contribute what they were required to contribute, which is 2% of their GDP to their own defense spending. Why? The Americans will take care of it. So why are our taxpayer dollars providing the security for 23 of the 28 countries that are in NATO? I am not for that. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Well,
and I'm glad he called them out on it.
If they join NATO for the right reasons of mutual defense And they've agreed at the 2% of gross domestic product to pay for it. I have a problem understanding why they're not doing what they agreed to do.
Well, because they knew that the Americans will take care of it.
Yeah, that's, I think time has to stop.
Absolutely. We have our own debt deficit issue. We don't need to be helping other countries' budgets. We need to be helping our budget. Infrastructure investment, $200 billion increase. I certainly agree that roads and bridges, and just drive around for a little while, you can see that they could use a little bit of work. I wish this was actually more, but veterans programs, there's an increase of $29 billion. I wish that number was higher because they are the people that give us the lifestyle, the freedoms that we have, and we should certainly be doing a lot more for them than we currently do. And one of the other increases, and this is Ivanka's, you know, program, new paid paternal leave program. Money would go to that for increasing the amount of time that parents can take off when they have a baby. Unfortunately, we already had our four, so we will miss out on that, as well will you. But when I, you know, 30,000 foot view of this, I'm personally, and again, this is my personal opinion, I'm okay with where the spending increases are going. I'm okay where some of these cuts are going. I really wish we would have addressed Social Security and Medicare, because that's what we really need to be looking at. But at the same time, as much as this budget has caught bad press, I can only imagine if those cuts were in there, just how poorly this would have been represented, even more so.
There comes a time when, you know, you have to, as the phrase goes, you have to pay the piper. And Social Security is one of those that those of us who have been contributing our entire life hopefully have funded other vehicles to add to the Social Security that we will be receiving in retirement. And a lot of people don't realize the decisions that they are going to have to make. You know, when do you start taking Social Security? If you take it before full retirement age, obviously you're going to see a reduction based on your income. If you wait past full retirement age up to age 70, it increases the payment that you will receive by 8% per year. But a lot of people don't think about the fact, depending on what kind of income they have in retirement, that if a married couple, we're talking about men this month, but if an individual makes between over $25,000, then half of their Social Security benefit is taxed, included in their taxable income. $32,000 for a couple, or if they earn more than $34,000 for an individual, $44,000 for a couple, then 85% of Social Security benefit is taxed. So we've paid into it for our entire life, but yet when we receive it, if you have any other supplemental income and your adjusted gross goes over those numbers, then you're going to be paying significant tax on it again. So
isn't that special?
Yeah, it's something that needs to be addressed.
I agree. Especially when you're a small business owner like we are, we're already taxed out the wazoo. To then be taxed again on the tax that we already paid just rubs me the wrong way.
Well, and the show is about financial planning, so the facts are the facts. The laws are the laws, and we do have
you
taxes out there.
You are just on a roll today.
So it's a matter of taking into account what they are, looking at ways of minimizing the tax impact that you have. And, of course, if you're living in Illinois, I think it's kind of ironic that the latest issue of our newsletter, one of the items of tips for cutting taxes is to move to another state.
Well, we were just talking before the show, and this is one of those situations where if the federal government does push some of these expenses down back to the state level, there are going to be some states in trouble, and unfortunately, Illinois is one of them. I mean, we
big
already
time.
Have a budget crisis, let alone pushing some of this stuff back down, and it needs to be addressed. But Illinois is the fastest state with people leaving, moving to Indiana, Missouri, whatever it may be, the fastest state with a population decrease. And Chicago is the fastest city with a population decrease.
Well, John, I always say it's good to be known for something. I'm not sure that that's it.
That adage of any news is good news, even if it's bad.
Something like that.
I'm not. Let's just say I have a hard time saying I'm proud to be from Illinois. And they have made it very difficult.
Well, what was it I heard the other day that the adage is that Chicagoans, for the most part, think that outside of Chicago, there is a state called Illinois.
No, that's true. Yeah, that whole border of Cook County, just make that a state.
That's the way it works.
So let's talk about, make the transition now from May to June, where we went from women. We're going to go from financial planning topics for women to financial planning topics for men. And it's, I have an article here that kind of got me on this to start this off. It says, how men and women think differently about money. I think we can just take money off because I think men and women are very different. I know just from my personal experience, and it's not that one's right, one's wrong, but
just
my
different.
Wife and I are very different on how we analyze things, how we look at things. And I think there's, a lot of truth to the fact that, women are much more emotional. Men are much more not emotional. Not emotional,
okay.
Analytical. There's a comedian that I like to listen to. And when he describes the woman's brain, he kind of looks at it as spaghetti, where it's all
interrelated.
Thank you.
Yeah,
and
you're welcome.
You saw me with my hands. I was talking with my hands there.
Mm-hmm.
And then men are very much like waffles. Everything has its own little compartment. We only deal with one compartment at a time. And smack dab in the middle of this waffle is a really big square that says nothing. And men, we try to spend a whole lot of time there. So when I looked at this, I'll go through this list, Mr. Larry, and you let me know whether you think there is truth to these. Women will tend to talk to friends and family. Men will not. And this is about financial topics.
About financial topics. I don't know that that's true.
Interesting.
I don't know that that's true. A lot of...
So you talk about your personal financial situation with friends?
Of course, I am a financial planner.
No, I understand, but maybe I didn't word the question correctly, because I totally agree with this on where I don't think a woman has any problem going to her friend and saying, we're in trouble, this is going on, that's going on, where the man goes into his cave. But, from your personal experience, have you gone to any friends and said, this is what's going on in my life. What do you think I should do?
Probably not.
Okay.
Probably not.
So I just did not word the question correctly.
Well, okay. We'll go with that.
It's all me.
It's all about you, John.
It's all about me being wrong. That's okay. Let's see. Women tend to trade less often and get better returns on their investments. Do I need a musical background?
We do need a little musical background. Yeah, could you sing the theme song? I would have to go with that because they I think have concern of making a decision in light of the fact it might be the wrong decision, so therefore they make no decision.
He said that, ladies, not me.
Mine hold.
Okay. Women are put off by technical terms and jargon. So, the fancy, asset out, whatever it may be. But the alpha in my portfolio with the standard deviation of, women are put off by those types of terms and like to just keep it simple. Where the male ego may try and use those terms, even though they may not fully understand them.
Well, I think that applies to most people that they have heard of, alpha and beta and the Sharpe ratio and whatnot. I think anyone who is not in our industry probably has no clue what they actually mean. In that case, but
some people in
there are those. But I do think that women by and large, don't want to deal in those areas and with technical terms. I'd go with that one.
And without saying, and that this isn't really an opinion comment, it's a statement, women live longer than men.
That's fact.
Yeah. I mean, all you have to do is go to the actuarial tables to get that. So, okay. So we have established that women and men look at finances differently. They handle finances differently to some degree, or at least emotionally surround. And, you know, we have touched on this how many times, that any investment decision, financial decision based on emotion is almost always going to be wrong. So let's look at another article that I came across that says the myths about men and money. And eventually what we're going to get to is, at the very end here, my last article is some financial planning musts for dads. And then from there, the rest of this month, we will then touch on these different aspects. But some of the myths about men and money. And then after each one, and then you give your commentary, I will have a one word that sums everything up. Men are financially savvy.
I think that's a myth.
That's a myth. Men think they're financially savvy because of something that we have, which is called an ego.
True.
Okay.
Very true. Yes.
Men like to control the family finances.
I think that's fact.
You think?
I think.
Now here's what we have here.
You said like to control. I didn't say they did, but like to control. There's a difference.
Yes, I have often joked, but there's always some truth when you have a good joke, that when I worked for trust companies and so forth, I had a spending account, and now that I have my own business, my wife is my CFO, and that expense account is very different than it used to
be. Went to zero?
Yeah. It's much harder to get things passed. Let's put it that way.
Board of directors has a big hammer.
Yeah, there's a veto stamp right there. Mm-hmm. But in the traditional 1950s home, the husband made and managed the money, and the woman stayed at home with the children. I think there's a lot
50s?
Of
50s? Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Nowadays, I think it's very different. I think we are moving, I don't know if we're exactly at 50-50, but we're certainly moving in that direction. Many modern couples manage money together and prefer to share responsibilities nowadays. Unfortunately, there is still pressure for men to act as if they prefer to be in control, but know that, and this, you're spot mm-hmm. on, but know that in many couples, this is not true. Some men even let go of their control, or have it taken away, to a fault, and need to be pulled back into the advisory meetings to make sure they're up to date on the family financial plan, if they even have a financial plan. So I think there's a lot of truth to that.
There is truth to that.
Okay.
And no doubt.
Men are money motivated.
I would say certainly baby boomers, the Gen Xers, probably the millennials, I'm not sure.
It is kind of a unique change because, you know, the word millennial and minimalist, if you do a search, there's going to be some overlap between those two, where the millennials are, a lot of millennials are minimalist, meaning that we don't want a whole lot of stuff. We're more concerned about freedom, having fun, time, that kind of thing, as opposed to, 80-hour work weeks, making a whole lot of money, being better, you know, than the Joneses, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think that definitely is generational and changing, that the millennials want enough money to be able to play and do the things they want to do. So money becomes a necessary component, but I don't believe it's the primary focus as it was for the baby boomers, where you went to work and you made enough money to support the family and possibly the prior generation, and to a certain extent the next generation, when we start talking about the sandwich generation, mm-hmm. Where some families have kids and on the other side they have parents who are taking care of both.
Men, number four, men don't like economically powerful women.
I don't know that they don't like them. I think that they are somewhat challenged by them.
Ego.
Yeah, back to the ego.
Back to ego. Here it says, some men feel threatened by women who make more than they do. However, many more love the idea of a smart, intelligent woman who is empowered to earn her worth. I think it has grown, but when you start from zero, even though there's some growth, it's still a very small percentage of the population. I still think there is that stigma. If you are a stay-at-home dad, that at least internally, you probably feel that other dads are looking at you like, why aren't you working and providing for your family? I don't think women necessarily have that stigma so much as men do.
Yeah, I think definitely.
This is all coming to, there's a point to all this discussion. There's a method to my madness here. Men make better advisors.
Fiction.
Gender does not determine an advisor's effectiveness with clients, the ability to be empathetic, competent, and credible. However, I still believe there are certainly more male advisors than female advisors.
And that's a problem.
maybe that's one of the issues. I still think there is some, again, going back to the previous issue, I still think there's some stigma that, you know, the men are the financial savvy ones, you know, stockbrokers and so forth. It's men. It's changing. But again, I think when you start from a very small number and there's growth, you still have a very small number as far as percentage.
Which speaks to the fact that our industry is undergoing transition. We're just a few days away from the implementation, as we now know it, of
yes,
the...
Yes, I know, and I owe you something.
The Department of Labor...
I owe you a Happy Meal.
Fiduciary. I'll pick out the meal, then I'll be happy. Yeah, got you there. But the fiduciary rule is taking effect, which is interesting because the Department of Labor has issued guidance in terms of a memorandum of understanding that although it is taking effect on June 9th, that they will not prosecute, which I think is an interesting choice of terms, they will not prosecute cases involving breach of fiduciary rule or fiduciary responsibility through the end of the year when the full implementation of the rule, January 2018, is scheduled to go into effect. So in the meantime, we need to act as though it is in effect. And of course, in our case, we have always run our business in a best interest capacity, acting in the best interest of our client, as I discussed with Diane last night, talking about this a little bit, that it doesn't really change anything that John and I do in our business, acting in the best interest of our client. We are using whatever term you want to pick, holistic planners. We are taking into account all aspects of a client's life, which has now been expanded under the fiduciary rule that you are not supposed to just sell a product, but you have to be in possession of information as part of the review and analysis of the client's entire financial situation, including all of their assets, including all of their insurances, including their healthcare situations. So some may see it as much more invasive. We have always seen it as a necessary component of putting together a solid plan. And many advisors are selling out. They've decided to, it's time to retire, get out of the business because they don't want to make those changes. Again, for us, we've been doing this all along, but it is going to cause us to complete a lot more paperwork in terms of documentation, in terms of risk analysis, in terms of basically putting the information away in a permanent capacity for future reference in doing what we've been doing all along anyway.
Well,
speaking of
men and finances and stress, because that's where we're heading with this, I just got a nice little text from my wife that the issues with the van will cost $700.
Mm.
I was a little stressed about that. We had some issues with the van, it had to be towed. We have vacations coming up, you know, going through the budget. And we had a lot of work done on the van already this year. But the place that where we take our vehicles is giving us a frequent flyer discount, as he put it. I don't know if that's good or bad, but all I know is that gave me a little bit of relief.
Wow.
I responded back with, okay, very good, many smiles.
Do we have a choice? Absolutely not.
Perfect segue to my next article in this series. Men, twice as likely to feel the financial burden in relationships. And it's more on men's mental health. It affects their mental health.
I think that's true. Absolutely.
Absolutely. I was sitting here stressing. I could, you know, thinking about this, I could feel my heart rate going up. And then I opened up the text and instantly relieved. I felt a lot better. Did put a smile on my face.
It's manageable.
But I think maybe there are more women that aren't as involved in the financial aspects. I'm not sure why this article here focused mostly on men. I think men handle stress and emotions very differently. And what this article here came up with through their study says that 31% of men feel they should be more responsible than their partners for financial matters. Just 14% of women feel the same. Those kind of numbers, I would have thought we were back in the 1950s. But
you would think.
This is this article here was done in 2016.
Recent.
Very recent. November of 2016. Some of the other parts that I highlighted is what's more, men are twice as likely to feel they must be emotionally strong, three times more likely to feel they must take practical charge in a crisis than their female counterparts. And this study here was done in Britain, so what we're looking at here. But what really stuck out for me, that the data shows that more than 4,500 men kill themselves every year in Britain, three times more than women, and the majority of the reasons for the suicide are financial matters.
Well, I would think that they feel out of control. Is certainly part of that and has no way of, you know, resolving it. You know, they don't feel like they have any control over coming to that conclusion of finding a way out, so to speak. And then certainly that's not a good way or any way out, but they just, I suppose, feel out of options.
Yeah, it says here, financial strain in a relationship was identified as one of the potential triggers behind male depression. And that's absolutely true. I know, you know, when you have four children, you're on a budget, you're running a business, you're doing this and that. Financial stress is very taxing. When you're scratching your head going, okay, well, how do I pay for this unexpected expense? You can do all the planning you want. There's always going to be surprises. It is very stressful.
Which speaks to the emergency fund.
Absolutely. But sometimes, you know, that emergency fund gets depleted and then you have another emergency.
It's tapped out.
So your children or your child is out of the house. So that's you're a little different stage than me. Mm-hmm. I have four little ones.
Yep.
A quarter of men said losing their job would make them feel less of a person compared to 17% of women. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think
when I was working for an accounting firm, they hired someone as a supervisor over me that was younger and had much less experience. I kind of saw the writing on the wall. Within a few months, I was told that my services were no longer needed.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time that other than in my very first job when I was in high school and I got fired because I mouthed off. But that was the first time I was fired.
No, I can't imagine that.
I know. I actually said what I was feeling. Go figure.
Mm-hmm. That'll get you in trouble every time.
My manager did not appreciate it. And once again, I was told my services were no longer needed. But when that happened to me, I was devastated. You know, I remember how am I going to go home and face my wife? We just had a, I was canned at the end of April. We just had our first child in February. He was only a couple months old. I was just crushed and didn't know what I was going to do. And I remember, the depression, the stress, the anxiety. What does all of this mean? Men, talk to your significant others, talk to your spouse. These are things that can be worked out. If having a financial plan makes such
a big
such
difference.
A relief, because you have it laid out. When something happens that you're not expecting, you put it back into the plan, and then you can look and what are the impacts that are going to happen long term. Yes, the short term is always difficult, but when you look out over the years, what is the impact? Would I teach my family when they're faced with a very difficult decision, they don't know what to do? I say, will you be thinking about it next week? Will you be thinking about it a month from now? Will you be thinking about it a year from now? Will you be thinking about it 5 years from now? And almost inevitably, you never make it to a year. And if you do, you certainly, I've never had, certainly 3 years from now, this is still going to be devastating for mm-hmm. me. So at the end of the day, these small little occurrences that we call life are just part of life and move on. What I don't like to see, what I didn't like about this article is that many men are committing suicide. It doesn't say how many have children, but your children need you. And as I mentioned, children, July will be financial planning for children. So there's a little precursor, but children need their fathers, children need their mothers. And, the stress, the burden that could lead to making these disastrous decisions don't necessarily have to be there. Having a financial plan can really help mitigate a lot of these issues. You get everything down on paper. You're talking about things. If you are the type of person, and I am certainly the one that goes into the cave, that one that goes into the little waffle box that says nothing, I'm going to go and dwell on just this one topic, this is your opportunity to get out of that mold, to get out of that process and get into something that's much more healthy for you, putting you on the right path to financial freedom, financial independence, whatever that may be, your version of that, and taking care of your children.
The key to it, I believe, John, is everybody needs to do a plan. I often am told by younger individuals who are either in college, vocational school, or have just gotten out that, well, I don't need a plan because I don't have anything to plan with. That's a bad excuse. You need a plan because you need to see where you go. That's fine. If you are looking for a job, how do you categorize a job? Do you take the first job that comes along, or do you look for a job that is commensurate with what your needs are? You need to have a budget. What are your expenses going to be? What are your goals? Do you want to buy a house in 5 years or 10 years? In that case, you need to start putting away money for that down payment. Yes, you will probably need a down payment to get a house in the future, but I don't think that's a bad thing. And you should start planning for retirement. Again, we touch on the multiplication of the power of compounding of money. Losing that first 5 or 10 years in terms of putting money away can be very, very significant on the other end, 30, 40 years down the road, losing that last doubling of the nest egg that you started with. So there are a lot of things, whether you have many resources or few or no resources, a financial plan is still something. It's a place to start, to look at the options. Even for someone who doesn't have a job, what type of skills do you have? Go through some of there's a lot of free online assessments that will help you gauge where your skills, your natural skills, your desire is, because work is only work if you don't enjoy it. And finding something to do that you can actually be productive, make money, support yourself, and whatever future that you decide to build on is the real key to success. Because if you're not happy doing what you're doing, then you need to find something else, is my opinion. So having a plan, specific time frames, objectives, implementation, and monitoring, that is a way to have some peace of mind for you and your family and saying that things are tight right now, but we have a plan. We're going to pay down college loans. I hear that constantly. While I can't save for retirement or a house or whatever, because I've got, you know, the average loan, a student coming out of college has between $35,000 and $40,000 in student loans today. And that's a nice down payment on a nice house. But they've got to pay it back. So how do you go about doing that and not saving for retirement, not saving for that house? Putting all your money into paying down a loan is not a solution. It's not the best solution anyway.
A couple other highlights I have here. Oh, we only have 5 minutes left. Wow, that went by fast. Let's see, how can I? All right, so real quick, 4 personal financial planning musts for dads. Okay, so
here we go.
We got the plan. That's the biggest one. That's not part of the 4, but that is the title over top of this, is get that plan. It can take away a lot of stress. It can make you realize that things aren't quite as bad as you think. The first one here is review your beneficiary designations. Absolutely. If you've had some children, you've gotten divorced, you've gotten remarried, this is critical because this, you know, those designations are a binding agreement, and that's where the money will go. Number 2, review your insurance. If you've had children, you're probably going to need some more life insurance if something happens to you. Designate a guardian for your children. That's your will. That's where you get to do that. And then I do not agree with number 4, unless you can. But it says save for your kids' college. Do not make that a priority. No one will ever, ever lend you money to retire. There are programs and things that your children can do to save for college. If you are in a situation where you've done your financial plan, you're adequately saving for your retirement, and you know what? You're lucky enough, you're blessed enough that you have some extra money left over at the end of the month after taking care of everything on your budget, then you can start saving for college. But do not make that a priority. There's an emotional stigma that you know, have to pay for your kids' college, and that is just not true. Unless you can, and that's great, then by all means.
And it's a personal preference, certainly. There's a lot to be said for someone who pays for their own college and, again, justifying or understanding the risks and the costs of borrowing excessive amounts of money to go to a college or university that may have better prestige is not necessarily going to turn into getting a better job or higher pay. So your financial planner should be able to help you go through the steps, the motions, somewhat without emotional response to determining what makes sense and what doesn't from a financial standpoint. So as we wrap things up, Men's Month in June, and we'll see any other changes coming down the road with the financial cafe. We'll let you know. Go to www.thefinancialcafe.us. Grab the blogs out there. You can download them, listen to them. Thanks, as always, to the Chef Shop for underwriting the show. Wonderful event last week for the 20th anniversary. Great to see everybody, and lots of prizes were won, and people had good food and a good time. So I always like a good party, John. How about you?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
If you didn't make it last week, that's okay. Go by the Chef Shop at 2320 Troy Road in Edwardsville in the Schnucks Plaza next to Target. Phone number 618-659-9840. Check out the coffee or the fudge or the popcorn or any of the wonderful gadgets and machines and anything that you could possibly think of related to cooking, because if it exists, they've got it. So thanks to Steve Jankowski and Daryl, our engineer at WSIE-FM 88.7, The Sound, for the opportunity to present some financial tidbits of information. And last month, Women's Month, this month for men, we'll be talking about more things related specifically to them. Not that they're all that different than for women, but we'll be talking about that. And then in July, touching on what type of planning do you need to do for your kids?
Absolutely.
We'll get it together, and wraps us up for today. Say goodbye, John.
Goodbye, John.
You've been listening to The Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop in Edwardsville, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. Listeners are invited to send your questions regarding retirement, investments, or any other financial topic that may pique your interest. Send the questions to John at jgraney@nickelfinancial.com or to Larry at lexo@nickelfinancial.com. John and Larry will discuss those questions each week during their Q&A session. If you prefer, they will respond to you in private. Thanks for listening to The Financial Cafe on 88.7 WSIE The Sound.